Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba's here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Our number is 1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba, that's the number to call. 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, Zorba, some interesting research to talk about.
Yes, we're going to talk about a study on aging that looks at aging and whether or not if you are given a slight at work, lose a job or so on, how it affects your heart and how it affects your health.
Okay.
Interesting research. And the disparity in cancer funding are those cancers that are not hot, if you will, basically giving, you know, producing more deaths because we're not spending time looking at them. You know, hot cancers and cold cancers, how do they affect you and how do they affect your loved ones?
Okay, that should be interesting. And our recipe.
Strawberry spinach salad, perfect for this time of year.
I'm remembering that. This is out of the vault, as I recall.
That's right, that's right. We had lots and lots of people write in for this recipe. It's a wonderful recipe. You will want to try it.
Again, that number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, we welcome a caller now in Sandpoint, Idaho. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question for Zorba about drinking liquids while eating a meal. I was having lunch the other day and having some iced tea, and my wife happened to mention that it was better not to drink a liquid while eating because it dilutes the amino acids or the enzymes, I guess, in your stomach and would prevent you from having good digestion, which led to a further discussion about how that would exactly work, seeing how maybe I'd have to have my stomach empty before I would drink something. So I'd like Dr. Zorba to give us his insight into that.
Well, have you ever had any problems, can I ask, from drinking while you're eating?
Actually, no. I think that I have heard about not having a big glass of water before a meal, but I'm not real sure why. I always thought maybe that was because it would fill you up.
This sounds like we should have this, Zorba, in the medical myth-buster category. Is it or isn't it a myth?
Well, let me tell you part of this. First of all, where does your wife come from in terms of her, is she from Europe or there's a
from
reason?
From Ireland.
From Ireland, okay. The reason was this was a huge thing in the U.K., Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales, there were certain things that you did. You had your food, and then you had your drink, and you had your spot of tea, and then you were done. And everything was very regimented. The food in England was very regimented. You had the beans in one part of your plate, then you had the meat in another part of the plate. Shouldn't touch the beans. And then if you have potatoes, it's in another part of the plate. And this was part of something called Fletcherism. And Fletcherism, and Fletcher was had a whole sort of movement caught on in the late 1800s or early 1900s where the fact that you shouldn't drink with your food because it dilutes enzymes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so basically you should drink separately. And the answer is it has zero scientific basis at all. I mean, think about Mother Nature. You know, here it is, you're eating and you're sitting there, you're a caveman and you're a cavewoman, you're having a piece of meat. They say, oh, no, honey, don't have any water with that because you won't digest it. You know, their body is great. It produces more enzymes or less enzymes based on what we have. And I'll just give you another idea. If you look at fruits and vegetables, they're loaded with water. And you look at meat, it's not nearly as hydrated. So after you masticate the food, some things have more water in your stomach than others now. So what do you like to drink with your meal? By the way, how did this come up in a conversation?
I think it might have been that I was sharing her iced tea.
It was a family issue. It was stay away from my iced tea time. And you were saying, wait, I have a drink. And she was saying, wait a minute, you shouldn't drink with your meal. Now, there might have been an ulterior motive for bringing that up
There may have been, yes.
But no, it doesn't make much of a difference. Once again, if we look at the Mediterranean Sea, where they live longer than we do, not just because they probably live in a beautiful area and relax. But when they, if you look at the way they eat, they sit down, they savor their food, they enjoy their meal, they relax, and they drink a certain amount of liquid with that meal, including wine. And I think if we think of them as sort of the ideal food eaters, that's the way I would do it. So sitting down and relaxing and enjoying your food probably is extremely important. I'm sure it is. And having a little bit of water is fine. Drinking before the meal is fine, too. You don't dilute anything. Your body just adjusts to it.
All right. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. 1-800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but a line is open for you at 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in Mondovi, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi, Tom and Zorba. Thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate it. What's up?
Well, a few years ago, I took a trip to Denmark. And it was a long flight, obviously, and I didn't sleep at all on the way, so I was very tired when I got there. And that whole first day of the trip, my right eye just wept and wept the whole time. But after I got a good night's sleep, it seemed to be okay again. But now, since then, any time that I'm overly tired, or especially if I'm outside on a bright, windy day, my right eye just weeps constantly. So I'm just wondering if you have any idea what might be going on.
Can I ask, have you seen a doctor or an eye doctor about this?
Yeah, I did. I talked about it with my doctor and with my eye doctor, and my eye doctor said, well, sounds like you have an overactive tear gland or whatever it's called. And I said, yeah, that's probably right. And he didn't really have any suggestions, though, on what to do about it.
How'd you like Denmark?
It was great. That's where my family's from, so we did the little... ancestral.
Oh, that must have been fun. A little expensive compared to the U.S. That's what I
think. Yeah, true, but we went kind of off season, so it was cold and rainy, but.
Cold and rainy and cheap. Rainy, and cheap. Sounds like Wisconsin. Cold, rainy, and cheap at times.
It was very much like Wisconsin. A
couple of things. So on the airline, one of the things that happens with airline air is it's dry. It's excessively dry, and because they keep the moisture out when they're recirculating the air. So you had dry eyes, and then you developed undoubtedly a response. You didn't sleep very well, so your eye was probably partially open. When you're closing your eyes, sometimes if you don't sleep well, especially in an airplane, you'll have a little bit of space between the bottom of the eyelid of the lid itself and the punctum, the area sort of on the other night, you know, a bit beneath the eye, if you will. It's not beneath the eye, but it's part of the closure. And so the eye then produces moisture and you developed an overactive tear gland. So one of the things you want to look at, which your eye doctor did, is look and make sure the duct is open. Because there's a duct, there's a gutter in our eye. And if the gutter is clogged, then we tear. But people who have a constantly clogged gutter tear all the time. And so sometimes they have to have that opened up. This doesn't sound like your case at all. It sounds like it's when it gets irritated and inflamed and it becomes overactive. And I would recommend an anti-inflammatory eye drop whenever that happens and just see what that does. There's an eye drop called Acular, A-C-U-L-A-R, which is a ketoprofen eye drop, which is an anti-inflammatory. And there are a few other eye drops in this class. And that can be very useful. And I think I would just hit it when you're going out. If you say, hey, I'm going to go out and it's windy, take the eye drop with you and put a drop in beforehand and see if that makes a difference. And maybe you can retrain your eye not to be aggressively teary when you're out in there. But it sounds to me like, you know, you didn't really damage it, but your eye is somehow just overproducing it. It's remembering it.
Okay.
I have another suggestion for you. Why don't you take drugs when you go on the airplane? I like drugs when it comes to airplane travel. And I'm friends with a variety of people who just, they say, oh, I don't want to take a pill. I'm on a long flight. I can sleep by myself. And I go, well, wait a minute. Why would you want to do that? Why don't you want to put yourself out? So why didn't you take a pill?
Yeah, I will do that next time. This was my first time on such a long flight, and my daughter was with me, so, you know, I'm trying to be a good mom. So,
How old is your daughter?
Well, she's 18 now, but this was a few years
well,
ago.
Well, a couple of things. I just want to make just a side thing. Ambien is a great pill. You don't mix it with alcohol because it can produce a little amnesia and people can become a little goofy with it.
Okay.
But if you take that, I take it whenever I get on an airplane. I always wondered, could I wake up if there was a problem? And in the middle of the night, they said, is there a doctor in the plane? There was somebody writhing in pain. And I had no problem waking up. I mean, I discovered these are mild pills. You won't have trouble waking up. Go to sleep when you're on an airplane. That's important, too.
Okay. Sounds great.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Now, here's a story you all should know about Zorba. Years ago, my wife used to be in this same business that Zorba and I are in on the radio. And Zorba and my wife were on a work trip at a convention somewhere. I was waiting at the airport for the two of them to come back. The plane landed. Yeah. My wife comes out with a crowd of people. Yeah. We stand there. Uh-huh. We stand there. We stand there. We stand there. Someone has to go into the plane, shake Zorba awake after his drug episode, and help him out of the plane and into the airport.
That was right. I took a muscle relaxer.
So don't talk about mild stuff that doesn't affect you at all.
I totally forgot about that. That was out of my mind. That is right. That is right. I think I was still sleeping on the plane. Well, the right drugs at the right time.
800-462-7413. It's toll-free, 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, tell us more about this study you mentioned having to do with us feeling mistreated. Not only do we get unhappy, but we could actually get sick.
Right. And this is really interesting research. I've been fascinated with this type of research for years. This is really a project on aging and health, and it's called the MIDUS study, M-I-D-U-S, Midlife in the United States. It's a major study. They looked at 7,000 individuals from the ages of 25 to 85. Studies started in 95, and it's going to go on for hopefully about 25 or 30 years.
This is a long, major study.
Long, major study. They look at physical effects, psychological effects. They found some interesting data, for instance, long-term data that shows that people who basically have a college education, at least 2 years of college, delay the onset of aging in their brain by up to 10 years. In other words, your brain is very, very active for up to 10 years. And they found this data at least up until the age of 75. So that's important. So it shows that how you think, how you learn can affect your aging process. But the question is, what about slights? The slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. You passed over for a job. You didn't get a bank loan. You know, you thought you deserved something. You didn't get it. What about the people who were slighted? And they said, I'm angry. I'm upset. I'm really upset by this. Mm-hmm. And other people who say, well, I'll pick myself up, dust myself off, and start all over again. And maybe I'll get it next time. And what they found was the people who were angry and upset had a higher incidence of premature death from heart attack and stroke and basically were like more likely to have heart attacks and strokes. And this doesn't surprise me. This goes along with other data that I looked at years ago when I wrote the book, The Longevity Code.
The Longevity Code, sure, that's in there.
Right. And I discovered there really are five things, five spheres that affect our life: physical, mental, family and social, spiritual, whatever nourishes your heart and your soul, and material. So basically, the people who don't have reserve and who are hit because they didn't get what they expected to get, those people have more stress hormones in their body. That's what's going
this
on.
This is all about stress. Yeah.
Yes, this is totally about stress. Flight or fright. Well, when adrenaline surges through your body, you know, what do? Well, the adrenaline does a few things. It increases your blood pressure suddenly, not good for your heart, sudden increase. Heart rate suddenly, not good for your heart or not good for your brain when that happens. It makes your blood is more likely to clot because this was flight or fright. That's why we take aspirin so our blood won't clot. And finally, it is arrhythmogenic. In other words, you're more likely to go into V-fib. So here it is. You're stressed on the job or you've been slighted. You have these stress hormones and you're not running anywhere. It works internally on your body. It's bad for you. So the bottom line for this is you need to find reserve in your body, in your mental space for when problems happen. Because frankly, problems are always happening.
Yeah. If we can do it, then that's really a good thing. But if you can't tell somebody else, you know, don't feel like that. You've got to feel better.
No. You're 100% correct. You can't say, don't feel like that.
Yeah.
But you can say, I'm sorry you feel like that. You should go take a yoga class, learn Zen meditation, go to psychological counseling, go on a vacation, go on a bike trip. In other words, you can make logical suggestions to find that reserve. The first step is knowing you don't have the reserve. Somebody may tell you. And the second step is, where do I start? Well, there are lots of places to start. And sometimes the first place is to talk to a friend, talk to your physician, talk to your minister, talk to a counselor.
Yeah, great advice. 800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Wichita, Kansas. Hello.
Hi, Zorba. Hey, Tom.
How can we help?
Well, I sort of have a fecal body odor, and I shower probably twice a day, brush my teeth constantly. I went to a physician about 5 years ago up in the Twin Cities, and they sort of just shrugged it off, and it wasn't really that bad at that time. I also tried going to sort of like a holistic healing center. It's a place where they did a bunch of blood tests on me and did some food sensitivity testing and said that I was sensitive to a couple foods. So I went on a very strict diet for about 3 months, basically just rice, cut out all the soy and everything. And that didn't improve anything. But I guess my question is, I don't really have insurance now, so I don't know if I should try to get on like a high-risk insurance plan before I try to take care of this, or if I should just take care of it. And if I do go ahead and just take care of it, what?
Well, I have a few suggestions, because first of all, we don't have a diagnosis. You know, you've gone to a physician to get a diagnosis. A couple of questions. When you say you have a fecal body odor, you mean it's breathing, or it's from your body, from your sweat? Where is it?
It's from my body.
Okay. Yeah, I sweat a lot. Your mouth is in good repair. No dental problems at all?
No fillings, no cavities.
Mm-hmm. No fillings. Oh, good. Oh. Good. Yeah. Fluoride. See, it really makes a difference. Yeah. That's what it is. I don't think you need a workup. I've got some suggestions. First of all, you know, you've been to a doctor. Chances are they're finding something are pretty minimal. You've gone through the integrative medicine route, you know, looking at alternative medicine where they've done their own blood tests, looked at their own magic, made some suggestions, and that didn't work either. I suggest we attack the problems two-way. There is a medication called Drysol, DRISOL. Now, Drysol is a great, highly effective antiperspirant. It's fantastic. And what you do is you use it under your arms, use it on your hands if your hands sweat, and use it on your feet. You get it by prescription from your doctor. You have to call up. It's a prescription item, and you follow the instructions. Generally, you use it every day or every other day for a week or two until you get it under control, and then you use it once a week. There is also a mouthwash you could use. It's called Paradox, P-E-R-I-D-O-X. It is a prescription mouthwash, and this mouthwash works on the on the gingival areas where there are bacteria in your mouth. Use the mouthwash. It's important you have to brush your teeth after the mouthwash, because the mouthwash has to be brushed off your teeth, because otherwise your teeth can actually lose a little bit of their white luster. And basically, this will work on the bacteria inside your mouth. I would treat it both ways, and I would use the Paradex probably for about a month or 2 months until I got it under control. I think this is a sweat gingival issue. I don't think you have to do a workup anymore, because you've already had the workup. I don't think you're in high risk for anything, and I think you should see what that is. Next question. Do you eat 3 or 4 meals a day, or do you fast?
3 meals.
Okay, because that's important, because sometimes people who fast produce more of an odor during the fasting state, because they basically have ketones, and they have a fruity smell, and that ketone smell can be bothersome. So it's important to eat or snack. I would have 6 small meals during the day, and see if that made a difference in terms of your digestion. And if not, I would consider GasX, because GasX has activated charcoal and will reduce the smells that come from your stomach when you burp. Do you burp and belch a lot?
Normal amount, I would say.
Normal amount, because that would be the other thing. Good luck. Those are all my recommendations. Call us back and let us know. I don't think you need a workup. I don't think you need to spend money, but you've got to get these two prescriptions, Drysol and Paradex.
Thank you very much.
Sure. A pleasure.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. Now, before we get to the recipe, Zorba, let's check in on the Zorba Pasture on Your Health inbox and see if we can help out a listener named Michael. Michael writes, several of my friends are replacing their well-established smoking habit with e-cigarettes. What do you know about e-cigarettes?
Well, e-cigarettes are an interesting attempt by the tobacco industry, small and big tobacco industry, to make another form of smokeless tobacco, if you will, smokeless nicotine delivery systems that will get people hooked but won't have any smoke in the environment so people can smoke without actually having the smoke.
Yeah, what are they?
Well, it's a little gizmo. You load it with a packet that contains nicotine. It runs on a battery, and it basically lights it, and so you feel something going into your mouth, if you will, and it must have a warm flavor. I've never tried it myself.
Yeah.
And supposedly it feels like a cigarette, and it looks like a cigarette. You know, they manufacture it. It's made out of plastic and looks just like a cigarette, and you put it into your mouth, and you suck it in, you blow it out.
So there's no tobacco in it.
There's no tobacco, but there's nicotine. So here it is. You're delivering nicotine, which we know is a bad drug. We know nicotine is not good for our heart. It's not good for our soul. It gets us addicted. And what it's another way of delivering smokeless tobacco. And it's not necessarily safer. It's like low-tar cigarettes. They thought were safer. And low-tar cigarettes are just as bad and produce just as much heart and lung disease as regular cigarettes.
And nicotine patch is another way of delivering nicotine. That's what people use in order to stop.
Well, there are a couple things. First of all, you're right. You bring up a good point. The nicotine patch delivers nicotine to the body. So does the gum. It delivers nicotine to the body. And so does the nicotine spray. So it may be indeed that they're – but we don't know what these do. We know the nicotine patch was tested by the FDA, and so was the gum, and so was the inhaler. So the FDA is trying to determine whether or not this is a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a drug, it has to go through the hoops to prove it's safe and effective. We know the gum is safe. We know the patch is safe. We know the inhaler is safe. We know cigarettes are unsafe, right? So we don't know whether or not this electronic system fits into the cigarette category or into the other category. Nonetheless, I wouldn't use it. And I'll tell you, smokers don't like it. They haven't all of a sudden said, gee, I like it. They like to feel the warmth of the smoke and blow it out.
Well,
so
an electronic cigarette, is this what people would smoke after having online sex?
You know, Tom, there's one in every crowd. Online sex, electronic cigarettes, virtual smoking. That's where we're at.
Keep your health and lifestyle questions coming. Just send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org and make them real and not virtual.
We have more of your calls coming up. We have some more really interesting research. We have our medical myth buster. But first, our recipe next on Zorba Pasture and Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doctor Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and it's recipe time, Zorba. Today we're dusting off an old recipe from our vault. We received an email from a listener named Aaron who writes, I was looking over the website, and there are a few recipes that I'm trying to get my hands on that were not on the site. My friend made them a long time ago, and I want to make them for my family. One is a salad. It had spinach, strawberry, and red onion, and had a poppy seed dressing that went with it. I have a taste for both of these and can't wait to have them again. Well, it took a lot of digging to find this recipe. It first aired in the year 2000 and was a listener recipe from Phyllis Wetzel in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So, back by popular demand, it's strawberry spinach salad.
I've got a question. You think there's really dust in that electronic vault? I mean, you got this image.
Depends on the age of the computer, I think.
Depends on the age of the computer. What were they like in the year 2000? No USB port, floppy drives, there's no doubt about it, and maybe a screen that was green.
My wife had a K-Pro, do you remember K-Pro?
K-Pro, I remember K-Pro.
It did nothing.
Sure, didn't do much at all. Didn't do
a great
much at
big,
all.
Huge metal thing that did
K-Pro,
nothing.
That's it. Yeah, actually, this recipe is back when they probably had punch cards. That's what we had.
She bought it, and 3 weeks later, the thing was off the market.
The K-Pro was great. I mean, it was a little green screen, and you needed like two sets of glasses to see it.
Anyway, back to our recipe.
But I want to talk, this recipe was good. One of the things that's nice, I like to do all different kinds of recipes, but I like doing complex, and I like doing simple. There's something nice about a simple recipe. There's something now nice about a refreshing recipe. Strawberries are wonderful in the summertime. Spinach is wonderful this time of year. Combining them together with a low-fat dressing is easy, simple, and delicious.
And the great thing about this recipe, I think, is that you wouldn't ordinarily think strawberry, spinach.
No, you don't.
Let's put them together.
You don't put them together.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Don't put them together.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, that's undoubtedly why we had this, and that's why we're going to do on it, you know, periodically do vault recipes for recipes that people really liked. A recipe we're going to do soon in the future is potato pizza. That was one of my favorite recipes. We've got to do that one. So strawberry spinach salad. Start out with a bag, either 10 or 12 ounce bag of fresh spinach that is nice and in a bag.
10 to 12 ounce spinach. Fresh or bagged?
That's right. And it's got to be fresh. You can't use frozen spinach in something like this. That's really for cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a quart of strawberries, fresh and cut into slices. Use the best strawberries you have. In fact, this is kind of a recipe you want to do when strawberries are in season and just coming off the vine.
Mm-hmm. A quart of strawberries, fresh, cut into slices.
That's right. One medium red onion. Do you need a red onion? No, but a red onion looks nicer. You could use a Vidalia onion. You could use a white onion. But why not use a red onion? You've got then the red of the strawberry and the red of the onion and the green of the spinach. I think my daughter's been telling me presentation, Dad, is as important as what you taste, and I think she's right.
Yeah, so a medium red onion sliced.
Okay, now we've got a dressing. It's a low-fat dressing. I do not like commercial low-fat dressings because they're made with gum. They taste gummy to me.
Gum.
Well, they're not really made with gum, but they use these texturizers that do not have a good taste. So if you're going to make a low-fat dressing, make it yourself. 1/2 cup of fat-free mayonnaise.
A half cup of fat-free mayonnaise.
Now, I'll give you a variation. You can use no-fat yogurt, which is great, mm-hmm. which would be a variation. Make sure it's not flavored because when it's flavored, it has sugar in it, although you could use a flavored. I would use a no-fat yogurt. Fat-free mayonnaise is a wonderful mayonnaise. Try it. You like it.
Yeah.
And that's what you start
with. I would think that the flavored yogurt would get in the way of the stuff.
Well, but it's a variation. Flavored yogurt, if you substitute yogurt for mayonnaise, it undoubtedly changes the taste. And you're right. It would get in the way. But that's because I like the taste of mayonnaise.
Okay.
A third of a cup of sugar.
Third of a cup of sugar.
2 tablespoonfuls of red wine vinegar. You could use apple cider vinegar. I wouldn't use balsamic in this, mm-hmm. but you could use apple cider vinegar or white vinegar, but I'd rather use an apple cider.
Okay. 2 big tea red wine vinegar.
1/4 cup of skim milk.
1/4 cup skim milk.
And 1 tablespoonful of poppy seeds.
A big tea poppy seeds.
Now, when I buy poppy seeds, I usually go to an Asian grocery store because they are cheap, cheap, cheap. If you buy poppy seeds in a regular grocery store, for some reason, they cost 2 to 3 times as much because they can get more. So Asian grocery stores have cheap poppy seeds. Buy them by the bag.
Yeah, and Zorba is cheap, cheap,
cheap. I am
cheap
not
as well.
Cheap. I am thrifty and frugal, not cheap.
That's right.
Okay. Wash and dry the spinach. Very important. If not, you will have sand tasting in your spinach because spinach, when it's picked, is low in the ground. There's often got to wash it really well. But I put it in the sink, wash it, and then spin it in a salad spinner. And dry it on a paper towel because spinach has little nooks and crannies and will tend to keep the moisture in it. Mm-hmm. Same with the strawberries. Wash them, dry them, slice them. Do it fresh. Strawberries cannot be washed in advance. Spinach can, and if you put the spinach in a plastic bag, put 1 paper towel in, and it will keep for a day. It's wonderful. Add the spinach to a salad bowl. Arrange the strawberries and red onions that you've sliced on top of the spinach. And just before serving, mix in the dressing and toss it together. Or If you want to do like a lot of my friends do now, you do fresh ground a black pepper, use sea salt that has a nice texture to it. You put sea salt and pepper over it, and then you drizzle the dressing on top, and then we'll cut down on the fat and the calories even more. 120 calories, mostly from the dressing and from the strawberry per serving. That's not much when you consider that a tomato is 40 calories. Enjoy it. It's a summer treat. Fresh spinach. Fresh, a nice fresh onion, fresh strawberries, and a low-fat dressing. How can you go wrong?
It really sounds great. If only there was a restaurant that served that salad.
That would be great. I know the name of it. It's Zorba and Tom's Restaurant.
Again, if there's a recipe you remember but can't find, or if there's one you feel deserves an encore performance, let us know what it is, and it might end up being our next Recipe from the Vault. Just send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for all our weekly recipe podcasts and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
1-800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Spokane Valley, Washington. Hi.
Hi, guys.
How can we help you?
My question is, my boyfriend was down in the car one time, and he said that he was listening to music, not loud or anything, but he came upstairs and he said, you know, dang it, I lost a frequency in my hearing. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I heard a buzzing in my ear. And he's like, and I was told that that means you've lost the frequency of your hearing. And I was like, that's ridiculous.
Can he hear out of that ear?
Yes, he can hear. His hearing's fine, you know. It hasn't been checked in a while, I'm sure. But he said, you know, but that just means you lose the frequency. And it wasn't a ring, and it wasn't like a echo or anything, and he doesn't listen to really loud music. It was just like a a frequency was lost.
Well, so is this still going on, or did it just happen that one time?
No, it just happened that one time. I mean, you know, said it happens to everyone every now and then.
That you get a buzzing and you lose your frequency in your hearing?
Lose a certain frequency of hearing.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a sort of it's kind of interesting. It doesn't correspond to reality, but it's a very interesting concept. You know, it's not as if we have these little pop things and all of a sudden the light bulb goes out and we can no longer hear that frequency. But
yeah,
People do hear pops and whistles in their brain, and then they are often associated with a change in hearing. And that may have come from that. In other words, people have tinnitus. Tinnitus is a loud buzzing sound. For some people it's loud, for some people it's soft, and it's a sign of hearing loss is what it is. And so what happens is certain frequencies are often lost, and so our brain fills in. We don't know quite why it happens, but our brain then fills up with a roaring sound or a pop or a whistle. So I'm not sure what his pop and whistle was from, but he was concerned enough, so he came in and told you about it, but he's not seeing a loss in hearing. How old is he?
He's 22.
22, yeah. You know, a 22-year-old's hearing is usually pretty good, unless you happen to be in a rock band and you listen to loud music. Does he have a factory job, or what kind of a job does he have?
No. He works at a restaurant.
Works at a restaurant. So, and restaurants sometimes can be pretty loud.
Yeah.
I have a very loud. I happen to have a decibel meter on my iPhone. I love it, so I can actually see how loud it is in restaurants. And some of the restaurants I've gone to are as loud as the subway in Chicago. And
Oh, wow.
It's really loud. And I was shocked by it. But I look at this meter and I go, oh my goodness, this is really a loud place. So that pop and the whistle does not mean he has a hearing loss. You know, generally we don't check that unless people notice a difference. As a waiter, he would notice a difference because the high-frequency sounds, which are often lost first, are often sounds are more likely to be in women than in men. My voice is pretty high, so I'm the exception of that. And if you're taking, you know, a restaurant order and you're a waiter, well, you're not going to get the order. So he would know it right away because he'd have to say, huh? What did you order to people? So he's probably just fine. I would just use normal hearing protection for him, and I don't think he's lost any frequencies. So you can tell him it's a myth.
I was right.
you were right. That's right. And you listen to the show, so you are doubly right.
Yes.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Sure. 800-462-7413. I had a hearing test just the other day, Zorba, and you know how they do that, where they play the tones in your ears, and then you punch a button when you hear the tone. Well, I was punching that button, and the tester guy all of a sudden threw his microphone and said, "You're punching the button when I'm not doing any tone." I was thinking I was hearing. You're so anxious to hear something.
You were cheating.
I was hearing
You were trying to get better on the test, and you thought it's the number of right answers. They don't take anything off for wrong answers. I'm going to keep on punching, and eventually I'll get a better number.
I thought I could kind of tell by his frequency how often he did it.
You know, usually people with a mental disturbance of some sort are the ones that are like that, Tom. But I've always thought you're educable.
Before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from John in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not too long ago, we did an eggplant recipe, you'll recall. Well, John would like to know why an eggplant is called an eggplant.
Does he think I actually have that answer?
Zorba
knows all. I'm shocked. I will tell you who knows the answer. It's the Grammar Police. And someone in the Grammar Police Academy will undoubtedly chime in and let us know the derivation of the word eggplant. Grammar Police, let us know.
Wait a minute. What's the shape of an eggplant?
I don't think it looks like an egg. Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's egg-shaped.
Oh, I don't think it's egg.
What shape is it? Square?
Wait a second. How many eggs have you looked at that look like an eggplant? Let's do it in the reverse.
Well,
have you ever seen an egg that looks like an eggplant?
Let's be honest with you. I'm so against eggplants. I don't recall that I've ever even seen an eggplant. But I think, in my imagination, it looks like an egg.
Yeah, you got quite an imagination there, let me tell you.
If the origin of a fruit or vegetable is keeping you up at night, or if you have a lifestyle question, we want to hear from you whether Zorba can answer it or not. Send us your thoughts in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more coming up. We have more research next. We have our medical myth buster and, of course, more of your calls right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We have an open line for you at 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But first, some, I think, interesting research on cancer. Cancer rates are down at least a little bit through the country. But, Zorba, it appears from this information that the cancer that's down, the death rates that are down, is the kind of cancer that lots of research goes into because lots of people are interested in doing something about it. There are other kinds of cancer which apparently we don't care about, and so the cancer is just as bad as it used to be.
Well, there are a couple of things. We have to look at our cancer and our heart disease statistics. We've dropped the risk of premature heart attacks by over 60% in the last three decades. We've dropped the risk of stroke, even getting strokes, by 70%. We've dropped cancer death rates by a measly 5 to 6%. Not very good, but we have to look at the cancers where we've done the best. Lymphomas, leukemias, we've done great. They had lots of advocacy. Yeah. Children dying of cancer was awful. Advocacy groups started in the 50s and 60s. We had great research. We had great drugs.
I'm guessing.
Breast cancer, clearly advocacy groups. Colon cancer, when Katie Couric's husband died of colon cancer, advocacy, you saw a huge change. Let's look at at the cancers that are not hot.
Yeah.
There are ones that are hot and ones that are not. Esophageal cancer on the rise, not hot. Stomach cancer on the rise, not hot. And interestingly, lung cancer is not hot either, but lung cancer happens to be the number one cancer death in our country, probably because lung cancer is caused by smoking, so people say stop smoking.
And people aren't willing to put lots of money into that because they say it's the person's fault for smoking, so they deserve it in a way.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. Now, whether or not the research produces the cure, well, on the whole, we believe research does, and it will ultimately help us towards the cure for cancer. But thinking about advocacy is a major issue. When I looked at the data, I thought, it's amazing. It dropped in those areas where there was lots of advocacy.
Well, isn't there something wrong with the system where you can't just have, you know, lots of money going into cancer
Advocacy has always been an issue. It's always an issue with anything that has to do with health. If we look at sudden infant death syndrome, it's a very small number of babies, but it's very disturbing. And so there was lots of research, and that research ultimately showed that putting babies to sleep on their back produced less sudden infant death. And that made a big difference, and people know it. They think about it. Advocacy is a rule. It's not the government's thing. We're talking about people who have a personal connection with cancer and want to stop it. Should it play a role? Absolutely. But it shouldn't be the only role that counts when it comes to the cure for cancer.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. A listener joins in now, Zorba, from St. Augustine, Florida. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple of questions, but the main one I wanted to ask about was acupuncture and your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if acupuncture is an effective treatment, or not, I wouldn't say treatment, but a preventative, let's say, that if you wanted to strengthen your immune system.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, have you done or do you have acupuncture now?
Well, you know, actually, I have throughout my life. I've lived several places, and I have done acupuncture, different places at different times in my life.
Uh-huh. How's it worked?
Well, you know, depending on what I was having it done for, it's interesting. When I was just sort of doing it just on a general, you know, kind of feel-good thing, I can't really say that it, you know, I don't know that it did anything. But one time when I went in and I felt like I was getting really bad swollen glands and getting sick, and I had said maybe I shouldn't do it because I felt like I was getting sick, and they said, oh, well, let me do specifically, you know, treat that. And the next morning I woke up, and I mean, I felt great. I mean, I didn't have, you know, I didn't feel sick at all. So that was pretty interesting to me.
That is fantastic. Very interesting of whether or not acupuncture will do that. We know now that our mental state affects our immune system. Richard Davidson at the University of Wisconsin showed in some very, very good, rigorous study that people who meditated had a more robust immune response to influenza vaccine than people who didn't. And other studies have shown the same thing, that meditation may affect the immune system. They've shown that social relationships may affect the immune system. People who have strong social relationships often get over their colds, their sore throats quicker. So we've got a psychosocial aspect here. I would not be surprised if acupuncture does something to stimulate the immune system, just like it stimulates endorphins to get over the pain that we often have. And I would not be surprised if this works at all.
Has there been any research on acupuncture?
Well, not that I've known of with acupuncture in the immune system. We don't have good research on these issues because, among other things, we've now discovered that sham acupuncture in some cases is just as good as acupuncture. There must be something of putting the needles in that stimulates it, and it may be the position of the needle is not as important as the needle itself.
What do you mean by sham?
Well, they've
put
done
a needle in or you don't.
No,
put a
they've
needle.
Done acupuncture where acupuncture is done in the meridians that are appropriate for acupuncture.
Oh.
And then somebody else gets acupuncture, but they're not in the meridians, and then they compare them together.
Like if I was doing acupuncture on somebody,
right,
I just
exactly.
stuck a bunch of needles.
And sometimes that can have just as much as an effect as full-scale acupuncture. Well, nonetheless, the research isn't out there, but it's a great topic. And I would recommend to anyone who's got an immune disorder that they try acupuncture and see if it will work.
Well, that's just fascinating information. And the meditation information is really fascinating. I love that.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my call.
We appreciate your calling. Thanks a lot. 800-462-7413, again, is our phone number. Time once again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from James in Marinette County that has to do with greasy foods and drinking. He writes, "When I was in college, on the weekends, my friends and I enjoyed going out to the bar and having a few drinks. Sometimes we'd have a few too many. Whenever this happened, we always seemed to have very intense cravings for fatty, greasy foods like pizza, tacos, burgers, that sort of thing. Is there a medical reason why someone would receive these cravings after a night of heavy drinking?"
Well, first of all, drinking lowers your inhibitions. I mean, people drink, they become less inhibited. If you're young and you're going around from bar to bar, you're more likely, when you're less inhibited, to have the comfort food that you like. So the medical reason is lower the expectations when you're drunk, lower the inhibition, and then, you know, pig out on whatever food you particularly like. And so that's why you eat the greasy food. But there's nothing about greasy pasta food. That's bar food. You know, basically, it's associated. Who goes out and gets drunk and has a tofu salad? I ask you. Do you
have you ever done that? No.
Who goes out and gets drunk and says, "I think I'm going to have some wheatgrass to
Well, yeah, I don't have that stuff when I'm sober. And I'm sober all the time.
Right. Just like when you're in the Navy.
Uh-huh. If you're craving us, I'm going to ignore that. If you're craving us to bust your myth, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
That phone number again, 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Franksville, Wisconsin. Hi.
How are you doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
I got a little dilemma, and most people that call do. I pee purple.
Wait. What?
I pee purple. Only in one spot, though.
What do you mean?
Well, in a recent trip to Canada, when I went down to the dock by the boathouse, mm-hmm. and I went to the bathroom in the lake, which we always do, and it was a purple fluorescent cloud.
Oh, wow, a purple fluorescent cloud when you peed into the water?
Yep.
So wait a minute, wait, what did you just have to drink before you peed into the water? I mean, I know you guys, when you go out and you're fishing and you're doing other stuff, you peed a purple cloud? Tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, it's a pristine lake in Canada.
Okay, pristine lake, perfectly beautiful, pristine,
clear,
non-polluted, clear
right.
Canadian lake.
Except
right.
for when he pees in it, not
except
polluted.
For when he pees. Yeah, but it's biological, Tom. Come on, you know he's an animal. It's biological. Okay, go ahead.
So, you know, the last thing we do before we get in the boat to go, you know, you kind of go toward the end there and go to the bathroom and you know, here's this fluorescent blue, and I thought, well, this must be something I ate. That's a little odd.
Uh-huh, yes, it is. I will agree with you. Peeing blue is odd, by definition, yes.
Yes. So I took my polarized sunglasses off and did a, you know, check, and nope, still there. Did it again later, and then I had to call everybody over, and I said, hey, check this out. What's going on here? Because we're all eating and drinking the same stuff, and nobody else would do that, just me.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I thought maybe my brother-in-laws were pulling a prank on me, as you know, we do that. And I thought, but they didn't give me anything to eat that I was, you know, suspicious of.
Okay.
The odd thing is, the water for the cabin comes right out of the lake into the toilet. So, you know, I'm watching in the toilet, I'm going like, okay, same water, but it didn't fluoresce there.
Oh, wow.
It has to be in the sunlight, I think.
Oh. Uh-huh. I have no idea what's going on here. Not at all.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the foggiest idea whether or not your brothers or your brother-in-laws, your relatives, pranked you by putting a dye in that you would actually excrete. There's a dye called pyridium that we actually take. It's a pill that we take, and it turns our urine orange, and it actually helps decrease the pain when we're actually of urination. And there are dyes that you can eat that you actually excrete, but I don't have the foggiest idea why you should have purple urine urine coming out of you only when you're in the lake, not in the toilet. I have no idea what
Wait a minute. Quick question for our caller. Were you smoking anything while you were in there?
No. The first time it happened, and I don't drink much. I mean, I have like a beer or a drink.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I did have some vitamins.
I have no idea at all. But I can tell you one thing. We are going to get lots and lots and lots of emails on purple urination and other different colored urination. And if anyone has the answer to this, I want to hear it. Thank you so much for your call, and thanks for stumping the doc.
Okay, thank you.
And keep on fishing.
Yeah. Before we leave for the week, Zorba, time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Okay.
Not too long ago, we were chatting about computers. Well, Randy from South Illinois took issue with one of your claims. Here's Randy. Let me preface. I think you have a really cool show. But you appear to have checked your frontal cortex at the studio room door again. In your broadcast, you maintained that the IT adroit could be divided into the categories of A, immigrants, over 30,
that's right.
B, natives, under 30.
That's right, exactly.
Well, the following IT elite hardly could be considered to fit your paradigm. A, Gene Amdahl. B, Bill Gates. C, Joseph Licklider.
Yeah, well, yes, the exception to the rule is this. If you learn computers when you were a teenager, you are IT adroit. You are a native. So it's not really that the ones that are over 25 are not natives and the ones under 25, because when I brought this up to an IT person who talked to me, they said, well, when did you learn about computers?
Yeah.
And I said, in high school. They said, well, you're obviously a native. You're not an immigrant.
Wait a minute. You're...
Bill Gates is a native.
Yeah.
So is Gene Amdahl, and so is Licklider.
You're over 30.
Oh, no, I'm not over 30.
Yeah, you are. You're over 30. Question for you. Who's Gene Amdahl?
I have no idea.
second,
I know Bill Gates is.
Second question, who's Joseph Licklider?
Oh, Joseph, I have no idea.
Well, that kind of proves his point in a way.
Absolutely. No doubt. You caught me, Tom. You caught me again.
That wraps up this edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. I didn't know either. Send your rebuttal for our next edition in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
See you next week.
Take care, Tom.
And don't forget, you can call us day or night at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hans and Franz, otherwise known as Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, are up in the booth putting this hour together. Charles Monroe Kane is our executive producer, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0613Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.